Hi, hello, hello, dishers, and welcome back to another episode of The Dish with Tish. Oh, how I have missed my dishers. I missed you guys. I took last week off for mental health. I needed to unplug from the internet, truly, and goddamn, it felt so good. And also just like getting my ducks in a row because your girl's going back to school. Yes, you heard it here first. I'm taking some fun pop culture, critical thinking, fandom, and journalism classes that I am so excited to embark on this journey. It's something I've kind of been toying with going back to school for a little bit. And a few of my friends have definitely inspired me in having like younger siblings who are in school too. And honestly, like hearing some of these interviews, like on podcasts, especially post Villa from Love Island, and how abysmal they were. I mean, some of these interviews were just so bad. And I was like, oh my God, I hope I don't sound like that. Like, no. And one thing about me, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to go all in. Okay. So I said, you know what? Let's take some courses and really lean into it because the dishers are just like magnifying. I'm just getting more and more, and I'm so grateful for you guys. And I want to give you the best content and experience there as possible, as well as, you know, put my best foot forward. So I'm very excited. So yeah, needless to say, I just needed to get my affairs in order before I start this new journey I'm super excited about. You guys know, obviously, I cover pop culture. This is a pop culture podcast. And I want this to be a respite from the daily grind and horrors that we're all facing every day. But I would truly be remiss if I didn't get political for a second. I understand, trust me, wanting to escape the fucking hellscape that is happening because it's a lot. It's hard to keep up with all the shit that we're just being inundated of, and it's happening every single day. But we cannot ignore some things, and we can never normalize or be desensitized to some things. And what Donald has done is actually terrifying, and every single person should be paying attention to this. You know, it's the signs are too clear for us to ignore. The fact that he has been continuously getting away with trying to push the boundaries to see how much further he can take it because he's trying to have martial law in this fucking country. And I am scared, and every American who cares about having fundamental freedom, rights, etc., should also be scared right now because it's fucking disturbing. And obviously what's going on in Gaza, like these people are being starved by Israel and nothing's being done about it. And it just is really disheartening and sad. And, you know, we just, at least for me, I can't be complicit. It's something I've kind of like struggled with, especially with the podcast, because I want to be a safe space, but at the same time, I can't ignore what's going on. And it is just to the point where if you're not speaking on these things and doing the work, not even just speaking about it, you have to actually be doing the work, whether that's donating, volunteering, like making an impact, you're complicit. You're just letting it happen. And I am someone who cannot do that. I cannot sit idly and just be restless. You know, I have to do something. And, you know, I know this is a little platform right now, but like I said, the dishers are coming in with plates ready. And I just hope that everyone is staying aware of what is happening and taking care of yourselves and your loved ones and your mental health, because it is a lot. And I'm just so glad that you're here right now. And, you know, we're just gonna keep on keeping on. At least we have each other, this community. I'm so grateful for you guys. And okay, Deep breath, everybody. Shake it out. Unclench that jaw. Maybe sip some water or a cocktail, because we're not letting him steal our joy. We've got a lot to get into. So enough about dictators. Let's cleanse the palate. I'm putting the fear of God back into the box. And I'm pulling out the life of a showgirl. So I had actually recorded the podcast yesterday. And then New Heights came out. And Nicolandria was on Watch What Happens Live. And I said, whoop, back to the drawing board I go. So I had to give the girlies what we're all dying over. And also just for my own personal reasons, I just need to get it out. Because I'm, you guys, I'm running on pure adrenaline right now. I got like 4 hours of sleep because I was tossing and turning, just like feeling so grateful for my dishers and pop culture right now, because like, oh my God, I don't know if you could hear that swallow. Wow. Well, New Heights, I'm going to start with that, because that was, I can't even like begin to articulate how special that was. Truly, like, I think of part of why the Swifties are having, I mean, it's gotten probably some of the most views on YouTube ever. Like, when I watched it, it already had like 6 million views. So I'm sure it's just skyrocketed everything. And I think a big reason why is because Taylor has been prevalent in pop culture for almost 20 years at this point. And, you know, especially the last like 2 to 5 years, really, really. And we've just literally never gotten anything like that from her. You know, we've had documentaries and things that are very curated. And this was still very much like we only scratched the surface of, you know, her relationship with Travis and Jason and just her in general. But it's just not something that we get. It's the scarcity of it. That's what makes us appreciate it. You know, that's what has got us in a fucking frenzy at the moment, because it's just not something that we get. And seeing the side of her and just the way that they were together. And even Jason, kudos, Jason Kelce, you're a client. You are a disher, because girl, you were in your Barbara Walters, Wendy Williams, Diane Sawyer motherfucking bag, honey. You were asking the hard-hitting questions that we all wanted to know. And you could tell he was just as geeked out and engaged as we were. And it was just such a fun time. So, we gotta talk about it. Oh my God, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I know a lot of people have found her to be annoying previously, and I understand that, but you cannot convince me that you didn't. If you listen to that entire thing, you can't tell me you genuinely didn't like her after that. Like, she was so charming. She was so engaging. I don't know. I just feel like we would. She's a Sag. I love a fucking Sag. I'm borderline Sag. I am cuss Sag. So, birds of a feather, truly. 1989, just so many, the numerology of it. Oh, but anyway, you, I'm getting so excited. You can't convince me that you genuinely didn't like her after listening to that, if you did, because like, she's just on her granny shit. She's just in her house, making her fucking bread, mind her business, okay? Making her bread and making her bread, if you know what I mean. Because my girl, okay, she stay looted, bitch, okay? Okay. Oh my gosh. I would say I probably cried twice. I probably cried twice when she got emotional talking about getting her master's back and how much that meant to her. I could just feel that for her, you know, and that's the reason why we have gone so hard for Taylor's versions, is because as someone who is an artist, I couldn't imagine not owning my art in all of it, the artwork, the lyrics, the music, all of that. Like, that would weigh on me so heavily. And, you know, she got emotional about her brother and her mom going into Shamrock to negotiate on her behalf to get her music back. And, you know, her revealing that, you know, she had been saving up since she was a teenager to buy her master's back. And like the Eras Tour, literally, like, we helped her get her music back. That, that in itself just like, whoo, gives me all the fucking feelings. She, you know, talked about how she went to go tell Travis and just fell apart telling him. And then he got emotional and apparently he was sobbing. And I don't know. I feel like they are endgame. I really do. Just seeing that interview and the way that they are together, like, something I was saying was the body language. And I mean, oh, the way their arms were entwined, he was grabbing her waist, she was had her arm around him. Like, these people are in love. These people are still, I mean, it's 2 years later and it seems like they're still pretty much in a honeymoon phase. And I think a lot of that, something that I noticed was how much he admired her athleticism. And it's true. Like, she's an athlete. Her, Beyonce, they are full-fledged, like, putting their hearts, souls, blood, sweat, tear. I mean, and she even compared it, like, the training that they have to do for football and for performing. They're both performing in football arenas. They're both, you know, traveling around to perform on a stage. And, you know, his is a field, hers is a stage, hers is rehearsal, his is practice, you know. And it's like, there's so much respect that it makes total sense. And they talked about going to the gym together and like how they be hitting it hard. And I was like, I get that. I get that. And even him talking about, if I never would have gone to that show and just been mesmerized and just been captivated and then left with such a desire to want to meet you, I would have never went on here and told everybody how butthurt I was. I had never been so engulfed in the curiosity of who you were. She said, oh, that's beautiful. And then Jason says the best part of that statement is that you didn't know what the word engulfed meant before you met Taylor. Yes. At one point she was like saying, I mean, it was kind of big words, but not really. And he said, I love when she used big words. And she says, oh, you're so handsome. And I just, that really set me, because, you know, sometimes you be dating somebody who's not necessarily on your level when it comes to, like, not saying that he's not smart, but like her intellect in a way. And it's just like, oh, you're so cute, I love you, you know what I mean? I was just like, oh. And they just seem so incredibly comfortable with each other throughout the whole episode. And just like their whole origin story, learning like how he really felt at the stadium and wanted to meet her and how he didn't plan anything. Like, girl, come on. I understand you're on the football team, but you need to at least plan accordingly a little bit. Come on. What? And her just being like, you know, if he's not crazy, which he might be, but this is what I've been writing songs about since I was a teenager. Like she said, I felt like I was in a John Hughes movie and he had the boombox like, I want to date you. I'm like, Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? Are like, oh my God. And just talking about how this podcast got her boyfriend and she was grateful for it. Oh my God. And then we got a little bit of insight into their relationship and how she's in her bread baking era, which I love. She's all about that sourdough life. Here for it. That blueberry one sounded fire. Funfetti. I love that. She's really just on her granny shit. And something I resonated with is when I can only imagine living that life, touring all those countries and cities around the world. And you like lose track of who you are. Like your schedule is so monotonous. And that's another thing that they bonded over, like their training days. It's the same thing every day when you're going through that. When it's a show day, it's the same thing. It's very consistent. So you kind of lose like the things you enjoy in a way. Like, of course, your job is the ultimate like joy, but you know, losing if you want to sew, if you want to bake, if you want to go to the movies, things like that, you can't really do that while you're living that life, when you're truly on the grind. And that's another thing. I just feel like there's so many parallels in their life that it just like makes sense. It just fucking makes sense. Oh my gosh. And then another point about their relationship, and then we'll get into the life of a showgirl. At another point during the episode, Taylor was talking about green flags, and one of Travis's green flags being that she saw early on, as she got to know Travis, his ability to maintain friendships. And she said Travis has had the same friends since he was probably 4 years old. She said he's incredibly good at maintaining friendships and is so loyal, and his friends are equally loyal and the funniest, most hilarious group of people. I'm like, oh my God, stop. Just the way they talk about each other, bruh. I wanna be your end game. I wanna be your A team. Like, girl, that bitch on the bleachers, that inner child is screaming for you, honey. Ugh. Ugh. I mean, that is definitely a green flag. And even just the way she said, like, Travis is a human explanation point, like a walking explanation point. She said she even uses them more now that she's been with him and he's been in her life. And I could totally see that. He's probably like such a hype person, always uplifting her. I don't know if that's a Cleveland thing. But I can totally see that. He's always at her corner, always like rooting for her. Like she's with her biggest fan. And honestly, this is like, hey, ladies, get you someone who looks at you like that, holds your work the way he was white knuckling that fucking vinyl, bitch. Girl, you would think that was a freaking grenade or something. A grenade, a baby, a loaf of her bread, I don't know. But the way he had that shit in his grasp, he was not letting that shit go at all. Okay. He was locked in. That's what we need. You need someone who is your biggest fan, your biggest hype person, your biggest cheerleader rooting for you. It's the same with Nicolandria. The way Nick looks at her, ooh, we're gonna get into that too. Don't worry, don't worry. I just, oh God. And Taylor was also spitting wisdom. One of my favorite quotes, I think, of this year, maybe in life, honestly, it's very Bertha Russell, Gilded Age coded. He said, "Think of your energy as if it's expensive, as if it's like a luxury item. Not everyone can afford it. Not everyone has invested in you in order to be able to have the capital for you to care about this." Bitch, period dot. I said, okay, this is a woman who knows what the fuck is up. She's been there. And I also think that's something to do with like being so unplugged, like she's not online, you know? And I get that. I, girl, I be having 30 DMs and I shut down. She said, seeing 200 million DMs, bruh. Talk about, oh, child, my ADHD would, I would just melt down. I'd be like that part in Barbie where she's just laying on the ground. That would be me every time I opened Instagram, truly. I know. But I was like, Jason, like, if you need me to go through, please, if you need me to answer them, I will. I'll move mine up to the list because I know I've sent her some DMs, girl. Another quote that I loved is she said, anything you feed your brain, it will internalize. Anything you feed the internet, it will kill. And I just, again, it's someone who's not chronically online. When she's not on tour, she's really like domestic. She's a domestic bitch. She's just trying to be at home with Olivia Benson, her cat, and Meredith Grey, her cats, posted up. And I fuck with that. I'm telling you, like, that's my girl. We see each other. I get her. Okay, now we'll talk about the new album. I am so excited because we got Max Martin back and Shell back. And as someone whose favorite records are Red, 1989, and Reputation, this is huge, huge, big, big news. Big reputation. But for real, also her saying that Red was her favorite re-record because Red is my favorite. Like, it's hard though. It is a Sophie's choice because I go back and forth. 1989 just being that being my year. Like, hello. Again, like, oh, the affinity I have for this woman knows no bounds. Like, oh, her, Beyonce, and Gaga, it's like, y'all be getting the girl in a tizzy. I be waking up like, oh. But yes, having them back, it's huge because obviously Max Martin is one of the most celebrated, talented producers and songwriters of all time. He literally defined my childhood, my life, not even just childhood, everything. Truly, he has been the soundtrack to my life over the years, and they are such a power team. And I really appreciated her, you know, talking about how when they initially started working together, she kind of felt like the newbie and very like green compared to them. And I mean, obviously, of course, like at that time she was compared to them. And she said taking the break and coming back, it felt like they all were on the same playing field. And I am just so excited to experience it. And something that she said was that she wanted the new album to have melodies that were so infectious that you were almost angry at it, and lyrics that are just as vivid, but crisp and focused and completely intentional. Pause for siren. The siren's coming to get me because somebody call 911. I'm about to pass out. I can't even breathe. No. The album's theme is everything that's going on behind the curtain, which is super cool. I'm excited to just see this new chapter in her life. And she talked about the orange of it all. And, you know, she was saying how she energetically, that's how her life has felt, and described it as this exuberant and electric and vibrant feeling. And she was looking at Travis the whole time. And I'm just like, ooh, it's probably because she getting dick down regularly, making the music that she I mean, what's not to, how can you, hello. Like, she's living her best life. Also, another thing. So if you know me. You know, I'm a spiritual girly down. I love my astrology and I also love my numbers. I have a very weird thing with numbers. 13, I do love that number. Threes, obviously, I have my threes tattooed. I love the number three, but mine is a nine thing. My favorite number is nine. So I'm always like adding things up to get to nine. But obviously, we know that Taylor has an affinity for the number 13. It's her favorite, and she's always doing things with 13, but also threes. So that's another reason why I'm like, we see each other because obviously 333, nine. And finding out that, first of all, Travis's lucky number, his favorite number is 19, not even 19. His favorite number is 87. Her favorite number is 13. Both of those together, 100. Be so fucking for real. That is some shit that is destined. That is some shit that is literally written in the fucking stars, if I do say so myself. Okay. And also, Jason, his favorite number is 13 too. So Travis has got it. He's attracted to people, like he gravitates towards people whose favorite number is 13. So when you tell me you don't believe in stuff like that, I'm like, you have not seen the miracles, you've not witnessed a manifestation, you have not seen the power that these things provide. That's crazy to me. If that's not endgame, I don't know. Because to me, I was freaked out finding out the 100 thing and 87. That was spooky to me. That's like truly divine intervention. It's crazy. And I also loved her talking about the Easter eggs because she's so good at that. And I know she's got to be a true crime girly because the way she be dropping these Easter eggs, honey, and then she knows that we call her the Zodiac Killer because of the Easter eggs that she be doing and the deciphering that we have to do and the way we pick up on it. That also geeked me out because I'm like, oh my gosh, she knows. She knows. It's crazy. And this was such a treat. Like I said, it's something we don't get often. And just seeing the side of her and seeing all of them together, it just really brought me so much joy. Excited isn't even in the word. I am jubilantly so fucking hyped for this album, which comes out October 3rd. I mean, my girl, just the intention. One thing, and this is something with my three divas, Beyonce, Taylor, and Gaga, they are so intentional with the things that they do, whether it's the tour dates, the lyrics, the numbers, all of it, everything. They're thinking about us. They know we're going to pick up on it, and they leave these Easter eggs for us. So when we're right, when it comes to fruition, it is really some of the most satisfying, beautiful stuff. You know, her even talking about the community that happens at her shows. And, you know, she said, I got LASIK. I see this. And the people knowing the dance moves and exchanging friendship bracelets. Like, it really is such a special thing to be in the Bayhive, a Swiftie, or a Little Monster. Like, those communities are, they're everything. They're everything. And just the fact that she plays into that, I just love her so much. I really do. And I'm so excited for her. This interview gave us so much. I mean, it was almost 2 hours long, and it could have been a live stream for all I fucking cared. I could have literally fell asleep with them like some Twitch shit and just been locked in. I'm so happy for her, and they seem really in love and super happy. And the dynamic between all of them, I was just so happy. I just love it so much. I really, really love it for her. What a week. What a time. You know, it's a lot of bullshit and it's scary, but then you have weeks like this. You get a Taylor Swift album number 12 drop. And not just a drop on her boyfriend's podcast. Oh gosh. Okay. All right. So Taylor truly needs to do a masterclass on marketing because at the way she lines everything up, and now she's giving that to Travis because he also had a great week with the GQ cover, and not just the GQ September issue that La Roche styled. Girl, I just feel like it, their relationship, it makes you believe in manifestation, magic, miracles. It's just too much. And I feel like she's been giving so many breadcrumbs because we know, I mean, I'm such a theorist, because when you're a Swiftie, you pick up on the context clues. You pick up on the little things, because it's all there, from the orange door in the Eras Tour to the outfits. She's been hinting at this for the last like 3 years, you know? Well, I was talking to, shout out Lindsay, my Swiftie girly. You will be here soon. Don't worry, because we got to debrief and dish on all of this information. But we were talking about just how frustrating it is that some people leaked the album already. And it's really frustrating, because it's such a slap in Taylor's face and her whole creative process. You know, I just, between Beyonce, them breaking in the car to get her music, to now Taylor, it's like, this is probably going to mess up the album release. It could be bumped up or delayed because of this. And it's just really annoying. Like, y'all have zero chill, truly. And I know like this fandom is crazy, but like the ones who respect her and appreciate her artistry would never, that's like the unhinged people who just like have no decorum, you know? And speaking of that, I just feel like people are always hating on her and for releasing new music. And it's just like, you know, this is something I'm excited to learn and talk about in some of my classes. It's like, I really believe that social media has just made certain people believe that they're experts on critiquing everything, to the point where people can't have anything. Like, this is why we can't have nice things, duh. Like, okay, we're bringing it. It's a Swiftie power hour. But like, you know, we look for anything wrong to take it to social media in the hopes that it goes viral, you know? And I feel like there's two factors in this. It's like the disassociative anonymity, when people feel unknown or detached from their own real world identity, they're more likely to pop off and have these insane takes to participate online and critique others. And there's also the minimization of authority. Like, there's no elder or authority to police people's actions. So you can be more emboldened to say what you want about whatever, because there's no authority to hold you accountable. So people, we have all these armchair experts and these people who think they know everything and will just yuck someone's yum. And I just am so over that. Like, I understand having an opinion, but until you walk in those shoes, I'm like, let's see you go on that tour. Let's see you put on these shows. Let's see you write this fucking music. But until you do that, like, I'm sorry. And I understand people are not for everybody, you know, like Taylor's not for everybody. That's okay. I have friends who will complain to me about her, and I respect that, because I can hear what you're saying. As long as it's not crazy disrespectful, I can take in that criticism, because I know she's not tailored for everybody, and that's valid. But I love her down. I'm so excited for this new era. I can't wait to see the vibes that we're gonna get. Rumor has it there's a sample of George Michael, some father figure. So I bet she saw Baby Girl. She probably did a Baby Ratu. She saw Nosferatu and Baby Girl on Christmas. I don't know. I'm excited. And I also love Nicolandria being on Watch What Happens Live. Yesterday beat a Jet 2 holiday. Truly. I mean, between the New Heights and Nicolandra being on Watch What Happens Live, Nick being almost moved to tears. His eyes were watering when Alandria was talking about their relationship and how supportive he's been. Again, get you someone. She said, I said, I've never been to Europe. We went to Europe. I said, I wanted to model. We've done 2 photo shoots. Like, the way he worships the ground that she walks on. I'm sorry. The nonchalant, casual, like, I'll see you when I see you. That shit's out the window. Okay. I need someone who's going to be 10 toes down worshiping me, because I am that bitch, will always be that bitch. And I need someone who sees that and is like, I'm so lucky to be in your company, yet alone to call you my partner. That's the energy. Cordell got a grill. He got an S in one of them teeth for Serena. I'm saying casual, nonchalant is dead. Chivalry is back. Chalant is back. Okay. Give me my Mr. Darcy. Okay. Because I give me my cousin Matthew. Give me my George Russell. Maybe not in the finale of season 3 of The Gilded Age, but give me that. If you're not giving me that, then I don't want it. Period. Period. Ugh. What a time to be alive, truly. To be a Swiftie, a Nicolandria person, a Bravo person. I mean, I think it's what the world needs now. I think it's what the world needs now. You know what else the world needed? That good hang with Amy Poehler and Adam Scott. It made me so, so happy. It was such a good interview. Just seeing them together. It's the first time we've really seen them since Parks. And Parks is one of my favorite shows. It's my safe space. It reminds me of home. And just such a special time in my life. And Leslie, I've always wanted to be the Leslie Knope of whatever I do. Hence, like, you know, if, like the great saying in Parks and Rec, if you're going to do something, whole ass it, don't half ass it, you know, put your whole ass into it. And it was just such a great interview. And even seeing Adam be like, I don't listen to it, or not listen, Adam saying like, I don't watch the show because it makes me sad. I totally get that. I totally get that. I can only imagine if you worked on the show, because I'm sure that, I mean, lightning in a bottle, truly, like, being on that set was probably such a magical time, so special. Everyone got along. The vibes were immaculate, you know. And yeah, I just love them so much. I miss Ben and Leslie so, so much. And it was such a treat. If you haven't listened, I highly recommend listening to Good Hang this week. It will give you all the feels. All the fucking feels. But something that gave me the feels in a negative way that made me want to fight is for Miss Kelly Clarkson. Girl, we know Kelly is a saint, because let me tell you, I don't know if you guys have heard about her ex-husband passed away of cancer. And allegedly in his obituary, he did not mention her at all. Like, the mother, like, leaving his kids with Kelly, nothing. He mentioned her ex-assistant, Brittany Marie, who he spent his final days with. That's who was mentioned in the obituary. Kelly was not mentioned at all. And that girl. So not only are you going to disrespect me in the grave, and then you're going to play in my face with my assistant, bruh. This, like I said, this is how we know Kelly is a real one, because, honey, I know some of y'all are like too young to know this reference, but I remember hearing about Lionel Richie's ex-wife, Brenda, aka Nicole Richie's mom, when she found out he was sleeping with her assistant. Yes, Lionel Richie cheated on Nicole Richie's mom, Brenda, with her own assistant. She not only whooped his ass, okay, but she whooped the assistant's ass as well and put them both in the hospital, okay? And then on top of that, the whole money stuff, apparently Brandon, Kelly's ex, what, like the whole reason of the separation, like the divorce, was because he was fucking with her money. He was taking her money and putting them in different accounts and taking her money. And apparently his dad, who is Reba's ex-husband, Reba McEntire, yes, okay, a single mom who works two jobs, he was doing something funny with the money too. So I wonder if that's something he learned from his father. But let me tell you, I would get him cremated. I would keep his ashes next to my toilet. And every time I took a good shit, I would toss a little of them in before I flushed. Because if you're gonna disrespect me, I'll show you. You say I'm crazy, I gotcha crazy. Because no, that's not what we're finna do. Or I would put them in a tree and make sure that's the tree where my dogs or my horses, I bet Kelly got a farm, get them out there, and I make sure that's the piss tree. Okay, that's the piss tree, because you're not about to fucking play in my face like that. And I just protect Kelly at all costs. Like, not our girl, not our first American Idol diva. No, we're not gonna have that. And I feel for her, and that is such a bummer. That's crazy. That's really nasty fucking work. And another breakup we had, Jacob Elordi and Olivia Jade broke up. And TBH, I never really think of them. Especially Olivia Jade. I was always bummed that he was with her because I love him. I think he's so fucking hot and talented and tall and lanky. Like, he's like, ooh, that's my kind of guy. And I've always been bummed out that he was with Olivia Jade. I'm like, not the girl who couldn't even get to into college. Her family had to, like, the whole college scandal with her mom, Lori Loughlin, Becky from Full House, her mom, like them going to jail because she couldn't get her shit together. So that always bummed me out that they were together, because to me, she's just like, that's nepotism. Like, give me a Jack Quaid, give me a Jamie Lee, an Olivia Jade. That's where you lose me. So they never took up any brain capacity. So hearing that they broke up, I didn't have much of a reaction. I wasn't shocked. It wasn't positive. It wasn't negative. It was truly just like neutral. And honestly, it just seems like they were kind of like a chill, kind of boring couple, respectfully. I just never thought about them. But yeah, after 3 years, I guess Us Weekly said that Olivia moved to Paris because, of course, she moved to Paris for a change of scenery. She needed a break, and he's been in Europe filming Wuthering Heights with Margot Robbie. And yeah, I guess he got back to LA and he was like, this is not for me. And they're donezo after 3 years. And I just feel like it's kind of a good week, at least for a millennial diva, to have a celebrity crush. I mean, we've got Jacob Elordi being single. We've got Joe Jonas, oh, looking so fucking sexy. We've got fucking Lee Pace pushing daisies, pushing my pussy. We've got Bad Bunny, Austin Butler, like ooh, we've got like a feast, okay, for the celebrity crushes. And I feel so grateful that they've been out here right now, truly. Jenna Ortega, the Wednesday. Oh my God. Oh, wow. Okay. Bear with me here, because it's been a minute, you guys, and I've got a lot to talk about. So I'm just gonna be ripping, okay? I'm just gonna let it fucking go. Something, speaking of a crush that I just mentioned, during Bad Bunny's concert, I don't know if you guys have seen it. He's been having so many people on the stage, and it's very like, I love the vibe. It just feels like a house party. And he had Austin Butler on stage with Darren Aronofsky, because they're in the new movie Caught Stealing, which I can't wait to see with Zoe Kravitz. And the videos of him with Anthony Ramos, who is also, ooh, my men, my men, my men. Ooh. And these videos of them at the show. And Austin, I don't know, just standing there, like the way he was just vibing, I was like, oh, he is looking really fucking good to me. Like he could get it. And then come to find out, I was watching him on Jimmy Fallon and finding out that someone had given him an edible and it hit and he was high as fuck and super awkward. And I honestly relate to that so much. It's so funny being someone who puts yourself out there, but being really awkward and shy, like, hey, that's me, truly. Especially like if I know you, it's one thing. Like, I'm gonna be like, hey, bitch, what's up? But to newer people, I'm a little like reserved. I'm a little shy girl. I'm a little like, oh my God, so stop. So I understand him completely. And it just made him even hotter to me, just knowing how like nervous I was, like, oh my God, he is so cute to me. And then we had the Jonas Brothers. Oh my God, bro. Joe Jonas, it's all coming back to me now. Like, something about that man. It's the swag, it's the style, it's the tattoos, it's the arms, it's the hair, it's the eyebrows, the social media presence. Like, Joe Jonas could get it always, okay? Like, man. But they kicked off their Greetings from Your Hometown tour at MetLife, and they surprised the audience and they brought out Demi Lovato. Oh my gosh, they brought out Demi. And she's saying, this is me. And when it changed a thing, I was like, this is camp rock. I mean, everyone was losing it. And, you know, this the content that they made backstage, to me, that was like so important. Like, to do a TikTok lip syncing to change a thing, and then they also did the TikTok to the viral Debbie Ryan where she's on the red carpet and she sat down with the president of Disney Channel and she said, I want to make history. Like, that is such a core part of internet culture, and for Demi and Joe to do that in our Year of the Lord 2025, it really was just hitting. I mean, it's just something that cannot be ignored, you know? Like, it really had the internet in a fucking tizzy. And we had a Jesse McCartney appearance and they sang Beautiful Soul. Bruh, bruh. Oh my God. And there is something that is so gratifying as a chronically online girly. When you know that that celebrity is putting out that piece of content, that they understand the magnitude of that reference, like they are putting this out knowing, oh, everyone's gonna lose their fucking shit over this. And then watching the said TikTok or reel, it just made me feel like, you know, like they knew exactly what they were doing when they recorded that. And everything coming out on stage. And, you know, it's so funny. Like, every generation has this like thing of nostalgia with their own generation. It's like my nostalgia, my generation was the most important. Like, if you talk to your parents, you know, they're like, you never understand. You had to be there. And that's true, like 100%. Like, you'll never understand what it was like. You had to be there. But for this, I think we are part of the generation that has this like overwhelming feeling and has that combined with the way we use the internet and this moment coming to life like that. It truly was indescribable. You really did have to be there to understand the magnitude of the situation. My God, it was so fucking good. You know what else was really fucking good? I'm going to talk about some of the stuff that I've been watching, because one thing I did do while I was off was watch so much content, because it was kind of a slow week with the entertainment stuff. I mean, there was the Sydney Sweeney. I mean, I'm not going to add more to that. You guys already know how I feel about that. I've been talking about how I don't really fuck with her like that. And, you know, I feel people were comparing Sydney to Sabrina, and I do feel like they're sharing the same, they're trading the same currency, but Sabrina is just better at it. And Sabrina is actively mocking what Sydney Sweeney is attempting to be genuine about. And the dog whistle of that fucking campaign, it was unmissable, you know? They are doing something called rage marketing. So both of their stocks were actually plummeting, and they kind of did this to get people talking about them. And it did work, but it's really at what cost? You know, like at what cost? You're losing your devoted people who have been with you from day one, and you're getting clicks. People are talking about you, but does that necessarily mean your stock is going up? Like, yeah, people are talking about American Eagle, but last I checked, their stock had been down 10% since that ad came out. So yeah, you're on everyone's lips, but people aren't spending their coin on your products. So I feel like the rage marketing, making the girlies upset, it's like, for why? What is the purpose? Yeah, you're on everyone's radar, but at what cost? I know some people think all publicity is good publicity, but not necessarily, babe. Not necessarily, because that ain't it. And also, speaking of dog whistle campaigns, what the fuck was up with that Matt Rife for Elf campaign that came out? I'm actually so confused. I just don't, like, has no one seen Mad Men? I'm like, who was this for? Genuinely asking for a friend, who was this for? What demographic did you guys do a market study? Like, I don't understand why you would put a man, a cis het white man, in a makeup ad. I genuinely don't understand. Yeah, there's a drag queen in it, but they didn't even talk about makeup one time. It was so bizarre. Well, they talked about makeup, but they didn't even put makeup on. You would not really know what the fuck that was for. And also, like, Matt Rife, the last I heard was he bought that fucking Annabelle doll. And it's like, yeah, he had a glow up, but is he trying to say he wear makeup? Like, what's the point? I just genuinely am so confused with the marketing. I feel like these brands have truly lost the plot. And I was talking in one of my group chats about this. Like, I feel that, I don't know if it's like you reach a certain level and you lose touch with reality, and you don't know what, like, the layman, the plebeians, us plebes, want. But I feel like if we're giving you our money, you should at least ask us what we want to continue doing that. Now it's like, I don't want to support that shit. I mean, I wasn't fucking with American Eagle to begin with, TBH. And Elf, I'm like, eyes, lips, find a new brand. Find something else, because I'm not, that's so weird. And this guy, like, makes domestic violence jokes and completely abandoned his female audience. I just don't understand the marketing. I'm like, Don Draper would be rolling in his fucking grave if he was a real person, and B, if he saw, like, what the fuck? It's just so, I don't know. I feel like people are really the marketing people are losing their audiences and just have no real grasp on what people want to fucking see. Like, literally go online or have a, oh, this person spends X amount of dollars, let's pull them in for a survey. Let's see what they want to do. I just don't understand why y'all not peeping that. It's fucking bizarre. Anyway. I'm gonna get into some of the stuff that I watched. Something that I loved was Together. I've seen it twice so far. It is canonly queer, okay? It is so gay, and I live. I think it was Dave and Allison's career best performances. I think it added to the performances that they are a real life couple. I loved that. I mean, their non-binary tea was valid. Anyone who's non-binary who watched that movie probably felt so seen by that ending. I mean, it just was so fun. It was not like anything I anticipated. It definitely was like, oh, but okay, so here's what my Letterboxd review is. And if you have a Letterboxd, you should follow me. I'm Chic Film Geek, and I live on there. It's one of my favorite apps. So yeah, give your girl a follow and we can swap recs. I can see what you're watching. Okay, so here's my Letterboxd review. And their non-binary tea was valid. Yo, I can't lie. I was not expecting this to be as good as it was. It works, one, because it's funny in all the right ways you want a slightly scary movie to be. Because it was scary, it was horror, but compared to the stuff that I usually watch, it wasn't that scary. And maybe some people wanted it to be more like boo scary, but I liked the storytelling and the relationship. I liked that it was a more grounded horror movie. So I'll say that. Two, Shanks, the director, wrote it with the male protagonist, who is no hero, no villain, just a basic ass white man with an assortment of insecurities, all too reliant on his partner for a sense of direction. And casting a real life couple is also such a good move. They smashed it. So I had a great time. I thought it was really, really fun. I gave it 4 stars. I've seen it twice. So obviously, she had a good time. I also saw The Naked Gun. So funny. Easily one of the hardest I've laughed in a movie theater in such a long time. And it was fun because I went with some improv and comedy friends, and there were so many people in the comedy scene who were there. So it was just a bunch of improv nerds like geeking out over this movie. And yeah, it's one of my favorite in the series. The Naked Gun series, the originals with Leslie Nielsen, are some classic movies. I used to watch them with my mom all the time. I think she had the hots for Leslie Nielsen, and she just never told me. I should ask her about that. But I had such an absolute blast. I was literally crying tears from laughing at one point, and I'm a living for Pamela and Liam. I think they are so cute together. I love that she's having this resurgence and people are like really respecting her and taking her seriously for the first time in her career and not just as a sex symbol. And I love that Liam is finding love after Natasha Richardson, his beloved wife, our beloved mother from The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan. And, you know, she died so tragically and he hasn't been with anyone since then. So I just think that it's a great union. It's age appropriate. They seem so into each other. Like, watching them on Watch What Happens Live, I'm like, oh, he loves her. The way he was looking at her, the way she put that lip gloss on him, I said, that's her man, period, dot. And I'm here for it. Okay. And speaking of Lindsay Lohan, Freakier Friday, talk about for the millennials, honey. Another millennial celebrity crush, Lindsay Lohan, Chad Michael Murray, and Manny. Oh my God. I was just like, this movie, everyone is so hot. Everyone's hot. I would be with all of you, even Mark Harmon, Jamie Lee Curtis. That's what Trixie and Katya call her, Jamie Lee Curtis. It's cute. It's cute. Talk about nostalgia. It is so nostalgic. It's for the millennials. It's for the millennial women. And as one, I had a great time. I wasn't expecting to be seeing an Oscar nominated movie. It was fun. It did the it understood the assignment. It was fun, carefree, bringing the girls together. I'm just so happy that Lindsay is having, like, we're living through a Lohanna-sance. And I just am so happy for her that she's doing the damn thing, you know? Speaking of something bringing back from the millennials, Project Runway. Bitch, Project Runway is that girl. This season, I'm like, okay, Freeform, you did that because I am very much into it. I mean, definitely the La Roach factor is a huge one for me as someone who lives and breathes for that man. I think he is such a great addition and he is truly like saving. I think he's going to be the saving grace of Project Runway and Drag Race, like clocking stuff that needs to be clocked because, you know, at one point he says, we're not giving out like participation. Don't make me that girl. Like, we need to tell these people what's up. But then when they do it, he said, you shut me up. And I appreciate that. And I feel like the designers are really fun. I love the dynamics between them. Like, it's not only great fashion, but it's also like tea. Like, it's a little like, ooh, the girls are fighting. And I'm living for it. So far, so good. Another thing I live for, K-pop Demon Hunters. Holy fuck. Have you guys watched it? I was not expecting to feel the way I felt watching that. I'm not gonna lie, I was not expecting for it to hit me in the fucking gut like that, bitch. I cried multiple times watching that shit. It's currently a front runner for best animated feature for the Oscars for me. It is so good. I mean, the music, I feel like the music should definitely be nominated. Golden is such a fun song, the first number one Billboard song we've had since 2001 with Destiny's Child, which is fucking in. That's crazy to me that it's literally been that long. 24 years since a girl group has been. That's wild to me. But that song, Golden, Takedown, I mean, the soundtrack is just phenomenal. I definitely think it's going to be in my Spotify Unwrapped, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because I loved it. Really good. I mean, honestly, Netflix is in her bag right now. Usually Netflix is kind of like the first one to go when I gotta cut back a little bit, when I have too many streaming services. Netflix is usually the first one to go, but between K-pop Demon Hunters, I watched Untamed. I really liked that. Eric Bana was so great. I mean, that whole cast was great. I love Rosemary DeWitt so much. Sam Neill, Jurassic Park. I understand why people liked it so much. I love a crime thriller, but also the sapphic, I mean, the Hunting Wives. Girl. Have y'all watched The Hunting Wives? More like The Humping Wives, because what the fuck, bitch? I had to give in because I said, okay, this show between Untamed, everybody that was number one for weeks, and then Hunting Wives dethroned it, and everybody was talking about it, and people were like, girl, you gotta watch it, like you'll like it. So I said, okay, let me dive in. I love Brittany Snow, I love Malin Ackerman. So I was like, okay, this could be cute. Dermot Mulroney, let's see. Girl, it is a mix of like Taylor Sheridan, who's the creator of Yellowstone, meets the L Word because it's sapphic as fuck, meets Desperate Housewives because bitches are dropping like flies. Okay, it's very campy. It's truly like a parody of Southern conservatism with hella gay shit, and everyone's horny as hell. I mean, we've got lesbians down, and we've also got some pegging. We've got men getting it too. And I mean, this message is for the wig department at Netflix. Guys, okay. We gotta lock in. Like, got to talk to the wig department because it's always a little off. I feel like Sheree from Real Housewives of Atlanta. Like, I don't want to pull it off. I just want to shift it a little. Like, why do the wigs be horrible? I don't understand. Like, it, I remember watching, we watched that Chad Michael Murray, the one with the strippers or the dancers. I guess they weren't strippers. They were dancers, the Christmas movie. And the main girl in that, we were literally screaming at the TV because her wig was so fucking bad. We were literally like, I can't even, it's not even the plot. The plot is crazy in itself, but this bitch's wig is so off. Oh my God. It's hard to lock in when the wigs be so fucked. So Netflix, y'all got to work on the wig department. If you need a consultation, I'll gladly help in. I'll get y'all some glue, just not Gorilla. You know, we can get some got to be like, we got to do something about the fucking wigs on Netflix because they be fucking tragic. Okay. But I mean, I will say, Hunting Wives, it was really refreshing. I felt like it was refreshing to watch a midsummer show that wasn't trying to be prestigious at all. Like, they know it's a soap opera. It's so soapy. It's camp. And they lean into it. And there's so much wrong with the show, obviously, besides the fucking wigs. But it was just nice that I watched it all. I watched it all, and it was nice because the cast did the damn thing. They leaned into it as well. And I'm like, thank you, Sapphic Content. You know, I was gagged by how many of the characters died by the end of the season, but that means more characters for season two. Hopefully some more women of color, a little less statutory rape. But I mean, it's definitely not a show you recommend to your coworkers, or you're going to end up losing your job, or worse, on a big screen at a Coldplay concert. But for your close friends, people, gay people, you know, people down south, they'll probably enjoy it. It's a time. It is a time. Oh my gosh. And then Wednesday, we got four episodes, which I'm kind of irritated because I'm like, I understand y'all are trying to get them subscriptions and split it up, but y'all could just give it to us. I'm sorry. And I also feel like it's Wednesday is spooky. Wet Adams Family. Hello. Why didn't y'all give this to us in September? I know we're getting the second half. I just feel like they didn't plan that accordingly. I wish they would have made it more prime in the spooky seasons, like the first half in September, the second half in October. But, you know, again, I feel like these brands, these companies aren't like picking up what the people want. But hey, Tish to Tish, I'm glad we're getting a little more of Morticia because she's one of my all-time favorite characters. And Catherine Zeta-Jones is doing a great job. She looks unbelievable. She looks so fucking good. And I mean, I stan my Tish, my goth emo legend, you know. And I will say, I love the first season is so top tier. It's so Tim Burton. It's so Wednesday in her own. And where maybe it's just the first four episodes, I do feel like this season is coming more like Wednesday is an ensemble member of the Addams Family as a piece of the ensemble at this point. And hopefully that'll change. We still haven't seen Gaga yet in the first four episodes. I literally cannot fucking wait. And, you know, the thing with the Addams Family that I love so much about them is that the family isn't funny because they're horror-friendly oddities. Like, they're funny because they're horror-friendly oddities plucked into a mundane world, you know? And the contrast is funny. And so far, with the second season, there hasn't been a lot of contrast. So I'm hoping that the last few episodes will pick up on that because Jenna Ortega, oh man, fuck, I love her. I love her so much. I will say I watched Death of a Unicorn last week. That was a fever dream of a fucking time. I did not have a great time with that. Despite me loving everyone in that cast, I did not have a good time. But she eats in everything. I love her. Her deadpanness is 10 out of 10. It's always stellar, but maybe the second half will pick up. We'll see. We'll see. But Netflix is in her bag right now. She's really in her bag. She had me living on there last week, okay? We also have our last season of And Just Like That. And, you know, I will say, as much as it was a hard watch sometimes and frustrating, I feel like this season, I'm sad that it's ending because I feel like they finally figured it out. I feel like they were finally like in their bag and starting to, especially with Aiden out of the picture, I feel like that made a huge difference. And I'm always going to love it. It's comforting in like the leftover pizza kind of way, you know, leftover pizza, you're hungover, it's on the counter. That's your go-to, you know, that's always what Sex in the City is going to mean to me. And I feel like they were finally getting that. They're figuring out that rhythm. And I'm kind of bummed that the last episode is this week. I hope it ties up really well. I mean, I don't know. I feel like that's a hard thing to do when you keep putting characters to pasture and then bringing them out. So I hope that they were able to do it justice because, I mean, we've known Charlotte, Miranda, and Carrie for so long, and I just want them to be happy. And honestly, Charlotte and Seema have been my favorites this season. They have been killing it. I'm living for Seema. Also, okay, for my OC girlies, I was trying to figure out the gardener. I was like, he looks so familiar. He's so sexy to me. I like his vibe. And I was like, where is he from? I know his eyes. Bro, it's fucking Trey from the OC. It's fucking Ryan's brother. The what you say? The most iconic shooting on screen. It's fucking the gardener. And Just Like That. That geeked me out hard. Hard. Oh my gosh. Another thing that geeked me out, Alien Earth. We got a couple episodes of that. Very pumped about it. It was so good. I am excited that they're leading more into the original film's lore. And also another geek out, the main actress, Wendy, it's Kyle Chandler's daughter. Bro, had no fucking clue. Had no clue. I was looking at her too, like how she looked familiar. And it's fucking Kyle Chandler's daughter. And now I'm like, oh, that makes sense. The eyes, it's in those eyes. So beautiful. He's hot. She's hot. Genetics. Those are good genes. How about that, Sydney Sweeney? Take that. I'm excited. I think it's going to be really good. I also didn't know Timothy Olyphant is in it. And that is another man that is just like, oh, aging like fine wine. If you haven't seen him in that Levi's commercial with Beyonce, ooh, that is my guy. Another honorable mention that I've been watching, Big Brother this season, really getting into it. I'm liking the dynamics a lot. I feel like hopefully this week some shit shifts because it's kind of being run by one person, Mr. Vince, right now. And I'm kind of over that. As much as I like his gameplay, I'm like, someone needs to make a move. I feel like now they're at the point where they can start making moves. You know, the first couple weeks, you're like, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want my HOH to be crazy. Now it's to the point, okay, let's start making some moves. Let's get some shit going. So I'm very excited for that. Very intrigued. Housewives, I'll have to talk about that next week because I've just been watching so much other stuff that honestly, the scripted stuff has been giving me more life than my reality. So that's kind of been at the, you know, not at the bottom because Miami's always that girl for me. OC is We'll get into that next week. But Big Brother has kind of been the front runner. Big Brother and Project Runway have been the front runners for me, for my reality TV as of late. So we'll get into the dishes. Ooh, what are we eating today? What have we been eating this week? Well, I'm going to tell you what I have been chowing down on. So my appetizer this week is the Las Culturistas Awards. Oh my God. This Las Culturistas really is, it's a big reason why I'm here now, because those bitches get me. And it makes sense. A Scorpio and a Pisces. Of course, I fucking love them. Of course. And I just, that culture awards was so fucking great. I mean, it is so deeply important to me that anyone who listens to this podcast watch the Las Culturistas Culture Awards, because they are my people. You know, like it's like that, you know, if you watch that, then we see each other, like Nene Leakes would say, we see each other. I mean, it was like a spiritual experience, you know, like the niche references and understanding it. It just felt like someone put an alien to crawl into my brain, fester in there, and put it in their award show. I mean, I was experiencing, like, they were expressing thoughts that I didn't even know I needed and that I had before. And it was just such a fun time. I mean, from Housewives, Andy, of course, the Bravo of it all. But then outside of that, the comedy, the Kristen Wiig, Allison Janney being honored, Andy Samberg, Gabby Windy, Ben Platt singing Diet Pepsi by Addison Rae. That took me back to like the 2008, like Pitch Perfect days. And it kind of did something for me. It's available. And yeah, I downloaded it. It's in my songs. And sometimes I do be jamming it. I do. Sometimes I be putting my makeup on and I'll be like, on the drive to get up, your baby. And I'm sorry. It's just that really, like, ooh, heaven is a place on earth. If you guys need writers for next year, please hit my line. I am available at your beck and call. Truly, let me know. Also, I love the decision to make Lisa Rinna like the through line throughout the show, modeling the looks of the year. I'm sorry, like, y'all can never make me hate her. And honestly, I think that her leaving Beverly Hills was kind of the greatest thing she could have done for her career, because, like, it feels weird hearing that if you don't know her lore, the Lisa Rinna lore, but, you know, it gave her some exposure, the most exposure in years, and it allowed people to not feel as though she was being shoved down their throats, and people are finally able to appreciate her for who she is. And, you know, she has completely 180'd her image into like a fashion icon. And obviously her daughters, Amelia and Delilah, and especially Amelia being so integrated in the fashion world and, you know, being sort of like the Bella and Gigi Hadid, the Kendall and Kylie's of the world, like, helped her get there. And it's just so funny, because if you, like, I rewatch Beverly Hills all the time, and Lisa, I mean, she was cute, she's stylish, you know, like, not anything breaking no glass ceilings, you know, she wear her skin tight leopard print cheetah with her iconic hair and selling her dusters on QVC, and now she's like a fashion, like, connoisseur and social media, pop culture community. Like, she set out and she's doing the damn thing. And I love that for her. I really do. She's kudos to you, Miss Rena, because you're doing what most housewives wish they could do when they leave, what they expect to happen, but you're putting in that work and I respect the hell out of it. I really do. My main course. I'm so excited to just talk about this at nauseam. If you follow the page or if you talk to me in the last week, you already know what it is, but weapons. Oh man. I what is there to say about perfection? Where do I begin? First off, if we want more exciting horror directors, we need more sketch comedy show writers and performers. Like, sorry, I don't make the rules, but no, honestly, I feel like between Zach Gregers and Jordan Peele, the sketch comedy is like filmmakers boot camp. You know, like you essentially, like if you're writing a sketch or a sketch review, a show, YouTube, TikTok, whatever, you are essentially making dozens of short films. And often you're imitating the visual languages of the source of parody. So it just makes great directors. And I just realized that, like, damn. It makes sense, because even if you're doing improv, you have to edit scenes and tag people out. Like, you really, it is a form of directing. That's why I got into directing. And I just feel like in horror, you can just do, it's just so rich, the fucking storytelling. And, you know, this movie in particular, like, it just blew me away, so much of the symbolism in this movie. You know, like the final chapter is apparently what Zach, the director and writer, said is it's very autobiographical for him. It's about, you know, this is not a spoiler, even though I don't know if what I'm gonna say, so I'm just so excited. But it's about examining the dynamic of children with parents who are alcoholics. And, you know, apparently Zach's childhood and the idea of a foreign entity entering a household and converting the dynamic between a child and the parents, and, you know, the child feeding the parents soup and being the caretaker and that sort of thing. Like, it's a very inward looking movie. But that said, 217 has multiple meanings. I was lucky enough, I saw it, went to an advanced screening at 217, and there's a lot of meaning in that. Let me pop off my theory, okay? So Zach's best friend, Trevor Moore, who was another founding member of The Whitest Kids You Know, don't know if y'all remember that, that's like circa 2000. I want to say it's like 2006, 2007, 2008, like the mid to late aughts was on Fuse. I remember specifically watching that show all the time. And they were also in the movie Miss March, if you remember that from like the 2000s. But yeah, Trevor Moore was Zach's best friend, and he accidentally and tragically passed away, and it was around 2:17 in the morning. And then the screenplay leaked online a few months ago, showcasing that the film takes place around Valentine's Day. And there are two people remaining in the classroom. Okay, walk with me here. Walk with me. There are two people remaining in the classroom and 17 students go missing, which resembles 17 people tragically losing their lives at Parkland in 2018, which was on Valentine's Day. Coincidence? I don't really think so. And then to make matters even crazier, keep walking with me here, a police officer that wrote a report that was 217 pages long after the Aurora tragedy that took place at midnight at a showing of The Dark Knight Rises, one of the victims died at 217 and was killed by someone who was pretending to be a redheaded clown afterwards, and Obama said was such evil, senseless tragedy. And I mean, these things could be avoided if we just banned assault rifles, which the House tried to do in 2022 with, you guessed it, 217 votes, but it died at the hands of the Senate. And there's a kid in the movie, one of the main children in the movie, named Matthew, and Matthew 2:17 in the Bible, that verse talks about the unaliving of children in Bethlehem. And that's the whole point of 2:17, is the way we reach for senseless tragedy. And Gladys, who is iconic, Amy Madigan, first off, when I found out, one, she's married to Ed Harris, I said, oh, wow. And two, she's the mom from Field of Dreams, rocked me to my fucking core. That really gagged and gooped me that that's the same fucking person. Crazy. But Gladys is the embodiment of bizarre, unexplainable things that are happening and leaving us unable to find it and make sense with it. And the person involved becomes this like mythical person, which is very synonymous with infamous serial killers, where they give them the sense of this magical evil. But at the end of the day, she's just a sick old lady. And we live in a system that leeches off our youth like a parasite that's just trying to make us younger and reverse the age cycle and to stay young. And it leaves us trying to find where there is like 217 weapons that people who really aren't to make us weapons. And therefore that makes us a weapon to ourselves. And Josh Brolin's character, Archer, he blames himself for never telling his son he loves him. And then he has a dream. And the dream sequence, instead of finding his son, he finds a giant AR-15 floating in the sky, symbolizing this fear that his son has become a weapon. The number 217 glowing on the clock. Why? Because our system never gets to the root of the problem. So it symbolizes that our kids are growing up to become weapons and they're falling victim to them. Isn't just a possibility, but it's only a matter of time. And that in itself, just like I could tell it was about, I started clocking it, especially with the little boy, his story, because God, I just fucking love this movie. Zach Cregger was inspired by the movie Magnolia. And that movie is very much like individual stories all coming together for one thing. And when it got to the little boy, I kind of picked up on that, like him having to take care of his parents and this foreign thing coming in and, you know, just isolating him from everyone, even the condition of the house, the wall, the newspaper on the windows, all of that. And I feel like you can just do so much with horror. The horror this year has been unbelievable. I mean, truly, between this, Together, Bring Her Back, 28 years later, obviously, Sinners, y'all know how I feel about Sinners. There's so much symbolism that you can do with a horror movie that you can't necessarily get out of a comedy or a drama. You can just sneak so much in there. And when you clock what it is or have these conversations, you're like, oh my God, this is the most genius thing I've ever fucking heard in my life. And I just, blown away. I'm seeing it again tomorrow. I fucking loved that movie. Highly recommend if you haven't seen it. It's just so fucking good. And now my dessert, the Gilded Age. Oh, the Gilded Age. You guys know I've been trying to get y'all to watch it. And I know a lot of you have, and it's been so fun connecting with y'all, and I'm just so glad that you love it as much as I do because I just love it so much. I mean, what a season, what a finale, directed by a black woman. Okay. Shout out Sally Richardson Whitfield. You are such a phenomenal storyteller. The finale was incredible. I mean, I'm such a history buff, and the way that this show, Julian Fellowes, Downton Abbey, my king, sometimes I want to wring his neck, but overall, I love him so much because the way that he weaves in the history is nothing short of magic. I mean, I appreciate the way that this show, contrary to Downton Abbey, it showcases Black Americans and Black culture in a time that, it's not just about Black trauma. He really uplifts Black people and shows like the affluent side as well. And, in the finale, there was a part where, Dr. Kirkland was visiting with Peggy, and luckily, thank God he is, because he's able to save George Russell's life after being shot, which was fucking insane. The last two episodes, I mean, holy shit, ending with the craziest cliffhangers, wild. And Kirkland saved George's life, and thank God he did, because at that time, if something had happened to George and Kirkland was the final doctor to see him, who know, he probably would have had to go on the run, because back then, Black doctors, that was not, you were working on your people, that was it. You were not operating, working on white people, and I was glad that George paid him handsomely, because he's like, you could have lost everything if I didn't make it, and I appreciate you for taking that risk, because back then that was not a thing that was done. Also, a thing that wasn't done, washing your hands before operating on someone. It's crazy to me. You could just go from eating a tuna sandwich to just knives out, fucking taking a bullet out. That's also crazy to me, but it was a different time. And I also loved seeing Agnes's soft side, seeing a different, softer side of her, being so nice to Ada, and seeing that, just I felt like we saw so many different sides to the characters that we don't normally see. Even like Jack, our beloved clock twink, him having that dinner with Bridget. Oh my God. Oh God, that really, my heart, be still my heart. That was so fucking sweet. Oh, I loved that. And the Felicia Rashad and Audra McDonald showdown, a masterclass in acting. I mean, it was 10 out of fucking 10. So, so good. Gladys, another Gladys. Gladys is expecting. And, I don't know what you guys think about what's going on. I've been talking to some people about it, and I think that they went out of their way to linger on the bottle of the drugs, and I could see a drug addiction coming for George, which bumps me out because he's such a, first off, Morgan Spector, George Russell. Oh my God, everyone was saying, I've watched a lot of behind the scenes stuff. People were saying how real the prosthetic chest was that had the shot in it where he got shot. I want that prosthetic if that's still available. I like it. You don't need to wash it. You can leave it. I like to leave it on, please, because oh my God, he's so hot. I would just leave it and smell it. I want to smell it. I want to sleep with it. Just, he's so sexy. Ugh. But I do believe that an addiction to painkillers is going to come into play, unfortunately, because the way he switched up on Gladys felt very weird. And also the fact that they lingered on that shot, I'm like, I know Julian. I know this man. I know how he operates, how he makes stuff. And I just could see that being a factor in season four. I mean, we have to wait years. So who fucking knows by then? I'm so annoyed. One thing about Julian and HBO, they love to draw some shit out. And I, bruh, like it would make me feel better to know that they're in some kind of pre-production, but we don't have anything. Nothing has come into play. So I think it's a combination of things. He did, George had just came through a near-death experience and he's probably questioning a lot of his life choices. And I think he is obviously upset with himself for walking Gladys down the aisle and not stopping the wedding. But I mean, thankfully, she's happy, but that really is just luck. So I think that George is grappling with breaking his promise to her. And, you know, one of the last things he says to Bertha is, I think there's something to be said in regard to both levels of ruthlessness. You know, George is ruthless in business and cutthroat in business, but he's always been honest with the people that he loves. You know, and he's always been honest with the people he's dealing with. Whereas Bertha is ruthless with people that she loved and she didn't ask them what they wanted and even lied to them to get her way. Yes, it was for the betterment for everybody. She's thinking about the big picture, but she did lie and connive to get her way. I was surprised that he left so abruptly the next morning. It didn't seem to fit the mood, but I also do understand where he's coming from. But I also understand Bertha. Bertha, that's my bitch. I fuck with Bertha Russell down. That's the energy I'm trying to manifest in my life all the time. Like, I'm trying to be Leslie Knope and Bertha fucking Russell, okay? Because that woman, she's gonna figure it out. She's gonna get it done. And seeing that side of her and their relationship, which has been so strong this entire time, kind of crumble, just broke my heart. It broke my heart. I was like, no, not this. And I have to wait years to get a resolution. This fucking sucks. This fucking sucks. I hate that shit. And then Oscar and Mrs. Winterton, that lavender marriage, girl. I'm here for it. I just love the show so much. I'm sad it's already over. I could watch it morning, noon, and night. It's just such a beautifully made show, beautifully shot show. The costumes, the set design, everything. It's just 10 out of 10. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Gilded Age. Oh my God. And I think that's everything, you guys. I'm full. How are you guys feeling? Because I'm full, but I'm content because it's been a little time. So I'm glad I was able to really dish with you guys on what's going on. And I missed y'all so much. And I'm so glad to be back in it. To have people like care. Like I took the week off and people were like, hey, are you doing? What's going on? And I was like, oh wow. Like people actually notice what I'm doing, and it just means a lot, truly. Like, your support means everything to me. I love doing this, I love geeking out. Y'all know how much all of this means to me. I love being in people's business, and I love talking about all of the great content that we are in right now that we are able to consume. I do feel so lucky to be able to talk about this with you all. And I love y'all so much. Make sure you're following us on the pod Instagram, the Dish with Tish Pod. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.